Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We're live. Of course we're live. That's the way it's supposed to be. This is the 22nd day of September 2014. Goodbye, summer. Hello, autumn. Welcome aboard for another week of Conversation Radio on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find your way to the chat room. Jump right in. The conversation is fine. Folks will be wandering by more and more as the evening progresses. Yes, indeed. Good evening, JNR and Jerry. Good evening, Embrant. Good evening to our longtime, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Hope everybody had a good weekend. I did. Good bit of work done around the mansion here, although no matter how much you do, it seems like it never really shows. But work done nonetheless. You know what's fun? Playing with old fiberglass. Man, what a party. Got my, went over to the local big box hardware affair that isn't Home Depot. And got one of those Tyvek suits for playing in the stuff. It's, yeah, fiberglass. That. Yeah. Non-fun. But still, it was nice to get some work done. So that was my weekend. Well, that, and yeah, I took time out to watch the Mountaineers not embarrass themselves against Oklahoma. It's just pretty obvious that that my beloved Mountaineers are... as was obvious in their game against Alabama, played tight, played close, and then just didn't have the depth to finish. So we're 2-2, and that'll close out that conversation for the evening. No, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com really is our home. That's where you go to get into the chat room, as noted. That's where you go to. Use the Listen Live button, which is the handiest, dandiest way of easily accessing the program on a PC. Of course, if you're not on a PC, if you're on an iVis or an Android that or something or another, we recommend Stitcher and TuneIn and uTunes. Those three apps work nicely. With the gentle reminder, of course, that any advertisements that you may see on any app carrying the stream for this program is not in any way connected to the funding of this program. No, we don't take any money from ExxonMobil or any of the other icky banner ads that you may see pop up on your app. No, not in the least. And consequently, the gentle reminder that this program is funded with listener contributions. That's it. Listener contributions. And we try to raise $150 this and any other evening. We closed out, finished out, to the good. Well, we, by about, $15, thanks to Robert's Up Over Down Under Australia challenge on Friday. When the challenge was met, he went ahead and took care of the underage for the rest of the week so that we finished even. Thank you very much, Robert. And thanks to those of you who responded to the Up, Over, Down, Under Wisconsin Challenge. So, Roger, Roger kindly chimed in to help get us started this week. We have, as a consequence, we got $75 to raise this evening, and hopefully that will be more easily reached than it would be difficult. So, you know, let's round it up and call it eight folks at 10 bucks apiece. And we'll have fundraising taken care of for this evening. Thank you very much. Now, today is the first day of the week. It's the 22nd of September, as noted. It's the first day of autumn. And, well, just so happens that it's also one of the more special days on the Horn Weekly calendar. Oh, yeah, it's special indeed.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's more in Monday on the Horn. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear more ends that will beggar your credulity, challenge your ability to differentiate reality from absolute madness. More in Monday on the Horn. That's right, that's right. It's here, another Monday, and more ends than you can even consider. Morans everywhere, right-wing morans, republican morans, libertarian morans, bircher morans, bagger morans, birther morans, deather morans, booger-eater morans, one and all. You can't tell the morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much for less than a nickel per hour programming. You will be amazed. You will be stunned. You will be shocked. Surprised at the level to which moranity can sink. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. And people carrying bags and or small children are warned to keep them in hand because the morans behind the thin cybernetic veil can't get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh, merciful God, it's true. It is true. Could be a busy evening. I got a moran toss up here, and I'm not sure, quite sure which way to begin, where to begin. Oh, okay. So it's a coin toss. So I went with a coin toss. Yeah. Now anybody familiar? And you know, Moran Monday is what we do. It's fun. We get a kick out of it. This is not to say that there aren't serious issues to be discussed, which hopefully you and I, we will discuss somewhere along the way. And make some degree of sense out of. Yeah, I've tried to watch as best I possibly could. I was very proud of the in excess of 300,000 people who marched through the streets of Midtown Manhattan yesterday. In an effort to bring attention to the climate catastrophe that is unfolding before our very eyes, and I hope that it will translate into further good efforts and good energy. Naturally, it was underreported by exponential factors by the for-profit media, because you know what would 300,000 people marching? I mean, how is that news, 300,000 people marching through the streets of Midtown Manhattan on a Sunday? I know. Now, there's something else unfolding, even as we speak. And that is the follow-up to yesterday. There's something. There was something going on today called Flood Wall Street. A group of people, I presume some of them even marched yesterday,
in the People's Climate March. But there were a group of people who came to the conclusion that if you want to understand who's driving climate change, you can go just a few blocks over from the route march of yesterday's action and find it. It's right there in New York City. Wall Street. I've seen a number of tweets out there in the past couple of hours, and they're pretty compelling. There were hundreds, that was the word that was used, hundreds, not tens, not thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands like yesterday, but hundreds of people gathered in the financial district in New York City today. And their purpose was to draw attention to Wall Street's role in relentlessly heating up the planet so that it becomes untenable for further human habitation. And apparently, it's one thing to have 310,000 people march through Midtown Manhattan, but, well, when folks start going over and making known their objection to the primary source of why it's happening, things are a little bit different. Looking here, and this, I'm looking here at a photo from Reuters. Three NYPD officers, patrolmen, whatever, with a barricade, a double row of barricades. The symbology is not lost on me. You know that stupid bull statue on Wall Street? It's kind of an idol to the bull market, you know, when the indices just go up, 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 and values go up, 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 and people get richer and richer and richer and richer. Well, there's a double row of those portable metal police barricades around the bull statue. Because I guess the powers that be in New York were afraid that somebody would hurt the idol. And it is. An idol is an avatar of veneration for a bigger spiritual presence, and the worship on Wall Street is not goodness. The object of worship on Wall Street is not decency. The idol worshipped on Wall Street is wealth. Wall Street is the beating heart of capitalism. It's the roulette wheel of choice of millionaire and billionaire players in a rigged game where everybody loses but them. And so there were the police guarding the idol of capitalism. And reports that people there had been gassed by the police. Tear gas, of course. Pepper spray. Cops pushing and shoving human beings. Most of the reports say pepper spray. I don't know if people necessarily how the hell do you differentiate whether you've been tear gassed or pepper sprayed? But apparently there was a very liberal use of pepper spray. And, well, enough of a police presence to try to keep people from getting onto Wall Street. The marchers wound up marching on Broadway. No word yet on the safety of the beloved idol. If you're there, or if you have knowledge of it, feel free to feel free to share the information. There have been a number of arrests. Bear in mind, none of the arrests have been of people who are plundering the earth or plundering anything else, for that matter. The arrests are of people who object to the plundering. Because that's how it works in a system gone fascist, which this system has. If you want to find out more or follow more, over on Twitter, the hashtag is Flood Wall Street. There was no particular company mentioned in the Flood Wall Street planning. There's just a general understanding that if you're part of the plunder and profiteer system that is housed on Wall Street, well, you're part of the problem. Now, to be fair, the plan was for direct confrontation. One of the alleged organizers of Flood Wall Street, is Bessie Schwartz. Bessie Schwartz said that they had planned to gather at Battery Park in Lower Manhattan early today and then march down to Wall Street, where they planned to stay until forcibly removed. So that's kind of inviting the police to engage in force. Other parts of the plans involved sit-ins around the financial district. They hope to unfurl a 300-foot banner. They hope to inflate a 15-foot carbon bubble. So, again, if you have further information, I do hope you will share it. Randy in PA pointing out a salient fact here. The NYPD don't seem to recognize that Wall Street is coming after their pensions next. Of course not. And the legions marched across Gaul and across the dusty wastes of Syria and toward Parthia, marched all over the known world, never really thinking much about the fact that when they got back, there was going to be no land for them to settle on, which is another way of thinking of a pension. Legions do what legions do. Now, morans. Morans. Morans, morans everywhere, right? Oh, yeah. It seems kind of pointless to talk about Flush Flimball. We really probably should. We probably should grandfather Flush, but some days he's just too good, just too rich. No, I don't mean like wealth. I mean we know he's rich. You know, God forsaken, how many thousand square foot mansion there at Palm Beach, and a swimming pool and a maid and a cat and his wife in a pit. But Jenny Thomas, and thank you, Marty, for calling this to my attention. And are we talking, okay, Jenny Thomas of the Daily Caller. And are we talking about the same Jenny Thomas? Is this Slappy's wife? I don't know. Clarence? Right. But a person named Jenny Thomas sat down to have a conversation, God knows why, with a man named James Golden. And James Golden is the current incarnation, whoever it is that's sitting opposite the quivering mass of repugnant, pustulant flesh that is Flush Flimball. Whoever that is, Flush long ago declared would be known on the air as Bo Snerdly. Now, in a sign of the absolute lack of creativity of Flush Flimball, the name Snerdly isn't something he came up with. The late great ventriloquist Edgar Bergen had a number of characters, and one of them was Mortimer Snerd. So Flimball has boosted somebody else's shtick instead of coming up with anything on his own. But anyway, the current incarnation of Bo Snerdly is a guy named James Golden. And James Golden is a man of color. And what a man of color he is. If, in fact, the Jenny Thomas who did the interview is Slappy's spouse, well, the irony gets almost too thick to bear. Get out the duct tape. Get out the hockey puck. I think you'll find it useful. Let's check in with James Golden, a.k.a. Bo Snerdly, holding forth, opining, pontificating, possibly even postulating over the state of race in America.
Morning. That isn't it a shame that for most of the black people, the good old days were the days when things were segregated legally in this country? That the good old days when there were two-parent families were the norm in the black community, and they were, two-parent families were the norm back during segregation days. It was Howard University was graduating doctors and lawyers who were qualified, not through affirmative action, but genuinely qualified through hard work and merit by the score. And there was this sense of we're achieving against all the odds and we're going to push and break through. Those were during the days of segregation. The good old days when black people weren't, when the number one cause of death for black people wasn't homicide, at least among 18 to 24-year-old black men. Those good old days were during segregation. So what liberalism has done to the black communities, it's not a monolithic community, is horrific. How is it that Kenneth Gosnell can practice in Philadelphia and do what he did to black women and black babies who were in some cases full term and do this without an outcry in a community for so long? How is that possible? And how is it possible that the only one interested in really telling that story is a white movie maker from Ireland instead of people inside the community? How is that possible? How is it possible that the people that gave us so many musical and art greats, from Alvin Ailey through Duke Ellington through Stevie's generation and Earth, Wind, and Fire and all these wonderful, incredible, diverse groups, now that the pinnacle of what we get out of black music are misogynistic, violent, gangster rappers who are so illiterate they can't put five sentences together to make a paragraph, and this is considered primo. How did the people that were leading the world's art form of music degenerate into this depravity that calls itself the music industry right now in terms of black culture? How do we get where we got some girl humping her booty up and down and that's considered the state of black art is disgraceful.
Had enough? Because I have. Just those seconds, those couple of minutes, are a masterclass on right-wing disinformation. First off, and I'm not going to haul out any of the epithets about Mr. Golden. I have no idea how much money he makes. Whatever he makes, you could quadruple it, and it still would not be enough to make me willing to sit there across the glass from Flush Flimball and listen to that vomitous pontification. But he says it straight up. I mean, the man is earning his right-wing stripes. He says the good old days were the days of segregation for the black community in America. You know, if only Dr. King had stayed home, if only Malcolm X hadn't got all uppity and provided the counterpoint to Dr. King's message of nonviolence. If only Rosa Parks had just gotten up onto her tired feet and given up that bus seat to the white person who damned well deserved it, well, we'd still have two-parent families as a majority of black households. Now, as a white person, and I mean really white, I recognize that I'm not in much shape to say a whole lot, but I think I'm in pretty good company if I call bullshit on Mr. Golden. The things that he described as the good old days of the black community are things that happened in spite of, not as a result of, the pernicious doctrines which he seems to think were the driving force. Does it not occur to Mr. Golden that were we still living in what he refers to as the good old days, there is no way he would be sitting across from that jiggling lump of toxic protoplasm that is Flush Flimball? No way. And the fact that he has the nerve to suggest that a segregated society was better for the creation of music. What kind of ideological bubble does one live in to be able to say such things? And by the way, in case you're wondering, this sputum goes on for another 23 minutes or so. And I frankly don't have the stomach for it. If you want to throw 25 minutes of your life away on it, feel free. It's over at Raw Story. You can go find it. I don't recommend it. But he seems to acknowledge, if even in a sort of backhanded fashion, that there was some sort of liberalism at work in eliminating segregation, in eliminating discrimination at lunch counters and hotels and in schools, or as Limbaugh refers to them, screwels. This idiot goes on to claim that raising the minimum wage will cause an increase in unemployment among people of color. If that is in fact true, then bear in mind that this guy's thesis just fell all to pieces. Because it means that there is some level of discrimination taking place by which people who are not black are hired for minimum wage jobs instead of people who are. Along the way, he also goes in for blaming, Barack Hussein Obama for young black men joining gangs. Still waiting for the first time that anybody refers to a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white people with assault rifles calling themselves a militia as a gang. Be waiting a while. So, consider that as we go forward. And of course, this guy, if you watch the video, you'll see that he is probably somewhere around my age. And that means that he is not just a right-wing horse's rear end. He's got a big bad case of old fogyism, too. How do we get where we've got some girl humping her booty up and down, and that's considered the state of black art? It's disgraceful in this country. I remember when Elvis Presley, who I don't remember, I wasn't alive, but I'm aware of the time when Elvis Presley, who was not black, was forbidden to be shown below the waist because of the way he gyrated his hip parts, because they were deemed crudely offensive and overtly, frighteningly sexual and likely to lead to the moral degeneration of the delicate flowers of femininity that bloom all over this country. Yes. I'm not going to sit here and blame politics for changing trends in music. That would be dumb. But it is worth noting, especially for the fogies, that at the time that the music was, the art form known as jazz was unfolding, for which James Golden notes to one degree or another, authorship and creatorship in the black community, because he cites people like Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong. It might be worth noting that music was also decried as terrifyingly sexual, filthy, obscene, dirty, nasty. And then when you move up into through the 1930s and into the 1940s, and you start seeing things like the Lindy Hop, which was, I guess, a variation on the jitterbug. Well, there's women showing their underwears. And that will lead to the collapse of Western civilization. Before Elvis Presley ever became a star. Sam Phillips had a little recording operation in Memphis, Tennessee, in which he produced what was referred to at the time as race music. Little Richard is still pissed off. Now, I beg to differ, Asa. I did say get out the duct tape and the hockey puck. I will not be convicted of things for which I am not guilty, dadgummit. Ace is saying, now, wait a minute, you never said anything about the duct tape and the tennis ball. No, I said duct tape and hockey puck. Carol noting, you know, I'm white, but I'm not NASCAR white. I'm just, you know, burn under the refrigerator bulb white. That's me. But some of these things are phenomena that are not necessarily reflected by politics. And in point of fact, politics tends to follow social phenomena, not lead them. We've all heard or seen references to the rising and falling of women's hem lengths based on politics. But I don't think that's based on politics. I think that's based on social and cultural events which politics follow. Politics had to be dragged kicking and screaming to desegregation. How many years was it? 51 or more between Plessy versus Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education? See, politics and law generally follow social trends. So far better if you want to have this analysis, far better to ask, where did the overt sexuality that is manifested in modern performance art music, where did that originate? Where did it come from? Shh, don't tell James Golden Snerdly. This will be our secret. It came from capitalism. It came from marketing. It came from the constant one-upmanship that is competitive money-making, in which one person had to outdo the last guy, and the next guy has to outdo, do you see? And it's also one element of an art form that Mr. Golden is apparently happy to stereotype. But again, I guess that's part of the good old days, too, stereotyping. But it's money making. It's capitalism. And it's also in the nature of art itself. Art probably evolves faster than any other means of human expression. Because people are always out there pushing and pulling and twisting and bending and sometimes breaking the rules. there's a big difference between, say, Leonardo da Vinci and Jackson Pollock. Both remain art. There's a big difference, I suppose, between Louis Armstrong and, oh, pick an artist. But they remain music. Explaining modern musical trends is a difficult exercise under the best of circumstances. But I guess Mr. Golden would be happy if we were all still doing minuets. It would probably be a giant waste of time to try to explain to Mr. Golden Snerdly, the Golden Snerdly. Awarded annually to the man of color who best represents the philosophy of James Golden, who would say anything, do anything, mimic anything to get a paycheck. I can only imagine what our buddy the angry Indian would do with this guy. Or Sandra. Or Tracy. I'm not gonna, though. But if you want to analyze art, politics is the absolute worst place to begin. Now, with the benefit of a couple of thousand years of hindsight, you can look back on general trends in a culture and describe them as we tend to describe them as. In, for instance, Mayan culture as classic, neoclassic, post-classic, apocalyptic. I can't even remember the names. But most people living in most cultures looking backwards always figure that they're looking back, that you have to look back at a golden age. It seems that people living in a golden age never really know that they are. Maybe that's because, well, you know, you only see gold at sunset. Seldom do you see gold at sunrise. If you want to opine on this, I welcome you. I think we're quite well situated inside the Moran Monday theme with this guy. I smell PR work going on out in the background. Marty noting, when Tracy, Sandra, and the Angry Indian get to Snerdly, I'm bringing the popcorn. Okay, so Marty's got the popcorn franchise. Note coming in from our friend Luda. Luda says, Bob, this might be a novel concept, but how about the country stop referring to the corporate media as news? On a great day, they might get 1 million viewers a night, not what I would say is the voice of Merca. Stop giving them credibility as the country's news. The Young Turks, Al Jazeera, Huffington Post, etc. There's so many other news sources around that get so much more traffic than corporate media. But we act it like if they don't cover it, then no one knows about it. I haven't watched the liberal Kool-Aid network in years, and yet all I hear is how MSNBC is the voice of my side of the aisle. I can name you podcasters you probably never heard of who get 10 times the listeners that the mainstreamers do, but yet MSNBC is the voice of America. I just don't get it. That's my 2 cents. Thank you, Luda. I've noticed in especially in the last year or so, a lot of disenchantment with MSNBC coming from our side of the discussion. And I don't know where it originated. I honest to God don't. I'm not saying people shouldn't hold those feelings. But being someone who actually remembers when there was no one saying anything even remotely liberal on the in the media sphere that is accessed by most of couch-sitting America, I'm still glad they're there. And but to Luda's point as well, as has been pointed out repeatedly, for all the vaunted numbers of a Falafel Man Bill O'Reilly or my daddy punched me in the face and I'm okay Sean Hannity, they both get their asses whipped by Cartoon Network every night. Every night. So that's, I mean, there's a reason you bring the duck doofuses onto your program over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And that is to try to pull in some of the duck doofus audience, because Duck Dynasty whips your ass in terms of numbers. But I remember when there was no counterpoint whatsoever to Fox. And I'm glad there is one. Now, I guess if I was to put up a wish list, it would be that we would get more news time and less prison porn time from MSNBC. But here's the funny part. You know what gets the best ratings? The prison porn. We here on the left sit and talk about the for-profit prison industry, and yet there's a whole lot of America that likes to tune in and look at human zoo creatures behind bars. And I guess there's always been an element of that. I mean, anybody remember the trashy movies of the late 60s and 70s, Women in Prison? It's part of our puritanical turn-on. It's part of There But For the Grace of God Goes John Smith. Marvelline, let's watch some prison porn. Let's watch those poor souls in prison that didn't get raised right and have now wound up behind bars in the stir because they didn't have good parents like we did. Aren't we blessed? Aren't we lucky? We absolutely are, Emery. Me, I'm grateful. Thank you, Luda. You named off, you rattled off a lot of different names there. I'm just tickled pink that you're listening to this program. And for everybody who does. Like I said, folks would be wandering by the Horn chat room. You too are welcome to jump in. Doctor Who's in there. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Benny. Good evening, Jan R. and Jerry. As noted previously, good evening, Kelly and M. Brandt and R. Kellison, Stockton, Larry, and Tim from L.A. Longtime chat room moderator Lottie has joined the fray alongside Sparky. Good evening, all. Okay, well, there's Luda's answer for when did the rumblings begin. Luda says it originated when Keith left Olbermann or was fired and replaced by a corporate douche who bows to management. Not sure which person we're talking about there. Here, I'll say it. I mean, I'm into full disclosure. I'd take a gig there in a minute. I wouldn't want to leave this, but I'd take a gig there. Because, among other things, they're meeting a lot of demographics over there. They ain't got no redneck. They don't have a hillbilly. Yeah. Say maybe, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 to 5 slot. How's that sound? Yeah. That'll be fun. Okay, here's an explanation coming from Carol. Liberals tend to get pissed off when MSNBC doesn't challenge a false narrative. When Joe Scarborough gets to spout the crap he does, turning MSNBC into Fox Light, liberals get pissed. When Chump Todd, a college dropout music major, is the chief political analyst who was sent in to save Meet John McCain, liberals get pissed. I still find great value at MSNBC, if for no other reason than to have Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow. I'll take 2 hours of sanity out of a 24-hour day. And that's as good an expression of where I am as I think I'm likely to find. Because, again, as I have previously noted, trying to describe MSNBC as some sort of monolithic liberal network is an automatic fail. As long as Joe Scarborough is holding hostage their morning drive hours. And by definition, we've been over this before, that also means that it's not the same as Fox. Because Fox doesn't have, say, a former liberal congressman. How about Dennis Kucinich holding down their morning drive time? No, they've got Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade, and oh, there she is, and it's More in Monday and everything, Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Oh, let's check in with the not liberal holding down the morning drive slot over at Fox, which means that no, they're not the same. You were saying, Elizabeth, you genius, you. Waiting.
Welcome back. So here's a pop quiz for you. What do we call the first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution? Well, if you said the Bill of Rights, you got it right. But most people didn't. Only 4% of students born and raised in the United States got that correct. And only a third of Americans can name the three branches of government. That's why here to take on a new...
And, you know, just no thanks to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda either. Because I'm sure there's not a statistical breakout of the number of people who got those questions wrong who also watch Fox. See? Oh, but it's no, we're just... All right, Asa, I don't want to hear it twice. Duct tape, hockey puck. Have it handy. Go ahead and use it.
New requirement for students. People are looking into them passing a citizenship test before they actually get a diploma. So we're going to take that one step further. Do they need it to go?
Yeah, so apparently Elizabeth Hasselbeck didn't have to pass a speech test before she got a job with Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. What would we, if we were right-wing, we would call her a white blonde affirmative action hire. No, we couldn't do that. Oh, now, Bob, just back up.
Correct, and only a third of Americans can name the three branches of government. That's why here to take on a new requirement for students. People are looking into them passing a citizenship test before they actually get a diploma. So we're going to take that one step further. Do they need it to graduate? Do they need it to vote? Joining me now, Whitney Neal, spokeswoman for the Bill of Rights Institute, and Lorena Rifo Jensen, co-chairman of the Utah Civics Education Initiative, the group working to pass this rule in Utah. Thanks for being
Really? Really? We're gonna look to Utah for... this is going to be a carnival.
Being with us this morning here. Whitney, I'm going to start with you. Should this citizenship test, should that actually be required to graduate high school?
What? I think, you know, civics education is a huge important issue, but I think requiring a test to measure if we've actually improved civic knowledge is a band-aid. It doesn't actually address the problem. We're in the middle of, you know, learning that standardized testing is limiting some children from achieving their full potential, and we want to add another test as a measurement mechanism. I think we're missing the root of the problem here, and that's engaging kids with civics and with government rather than just giving them another arbitrary test.
Okay, so Lorena, I'll let you respond to that. I know you actually came here, immigrated from Chile in the 80s. What do you say?
I think we need to do everything that we can to engage our new generation of students so they can be involved in civics. I think it's human nature not to study, not to learn, if we can put it away. But I think if you ask them to complete a test, it will create an incredible conversation among family members. And
you know, it's especially fun on test day when your precious little child is getting ready to get on the bus and vomits. Because we've put one more layer of terrifying stress on children who are already over-tested. Now, what do you make of the fact that this issue, this nothing burger, is rearing its head in a place like Utah? Can you imagine the Utah civics test? The Angel Maroney inspired which of these people to sign the Declaration of Independence? Oh, no, let's do this. The Angel Maroney inspired which of these individuals to author the Declaration of Independence? Joseph Smith? Brigham Young? Alfred E. Newman? Thomas Jefferson? That'll be a hoot. Yeah, I like Carol's idea. How about we have all of the Fox anchors take that test live on the air and see if they can pass? See? But this is going to get more fun because Elizabeth Hasselbeck is trying to earn her street cred as a deep thinker, which means there's going to be some real stupid coming along in pretty short order. So here you've got a pair of women, one of whom thinks that it would be nice to teach some civics in Utah, but we don't necessarily have to have a test. And the other person thinks that we need a test in Utah because it's human nature to be lazy. See, I take issue with that. Because if it was in human nature to be lazy, this woman must be a real Republican. If it's human nature to be lazy, then human nature really doesn't develop because humans die off. But then again, she probably doesn't believe in evolution, so oh well.
I think it's a good step.
What about if we took it one step further, as I just mentioned?
Here it comes. Are we all taped up? Hockey pucks in? Okay. All right.
Into voting. Should you have to answer, the majority of these questions, if not by graduation of high school, but by the time you vote?
Liz, can I call you Liz? The voting age in this country is 18. Most, not all, but most graduating high school seniors will be 18 before they graduate high school. That's just one. Two, let's let her finish what passes for her thought.
Whitney?
Well, I know a lot of people that probably could get a perfect score on their driving test, but you put them behind the wheel, and that doesn't necessarily make them a good driver. So, again, I think we need to go back and look at the real basis of this problem. Have we made civics education a priority in the classroom, and have we equipped teachers with the ability to engage kids on this topic? Now, my kids, I taught 8th grade. They were debating the constitutionality of Obamacare, and that taught me so much more about what they knew.
That must have been a real peach. A bunch of lily white Utah kids debating the constitutionality of Obamacare in Utah. Question: is Obamacare a fascist overreach of our Constitution or a communist undermining of our Constitution? Debate! And by the way, from another section of the test, this in from Carol. Utah math testing. If Jedediah and his 12 wives and their 57 children go to a picnic with Mordecai and his 7 wives and their 19 children and Levi and his 9 wives and their 29 children, how many atheists will burn in hell before sundown? None. That's the answer. None. Because we'll dead baptize them and they won't be atheists anymore. Sheesh. Anyway, so, but those were eighth graders debating Obamacare, so, right. Go ahead.
And what they could do, then I would have learned from a pen and paper test.
Lorena, what do you say about this? Voting, should it be required?
I think personally that anything that you can do to ensure that our young people, our families are involved in civic learnings, the history of our country is a positive. And furthermore, I think how can you go into planning what the generation will do in the future if you're not prepared and understand where we have been?
Sure.
Personally, I've taken my daughters to voting with me, and I think it's critical. You cannot be engaged without having the full knowledge and understanding of your nation.
Oddly enough, neither of them really answered the question, except the second lady there who said that, well, I mean, you heard what she said. But this is the state of affairs in 2014, America. We can ask on a widely broadcasted cable television network whether or not a modern incarnation of a literacy test can be imposed at the polls or upon the franchise. You know those good old days that Joe Golden was talking about? I mean, there's a reason these are our two lead morons. Because they are two peas in a right-wing pod. Those golden years, that golden age, the good old days that Mr. Golden was talking about are days when a person of color approaching the poll, if not lynched outright or beaten or threatened, would be invited to come and cast his vote, as long as he could sign his name with a ballpoint pen upon a piece of waxed paper, or could prove his literacy by reading Chinese characters from a restaurant menu. Well, he didn't say what kind of literacy now, did he? Hell. Oh, the sun shines bright. It is 2014, and a pulse, a check drawing pulse at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is floating the idea of literacy testing as a condition precedent to voting. No, Bob, she's talking about civics. It's a form of literacy. Can you just imagine the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda literacy test? Are you a Democrat? Yes, you don't get to vote. Which is really, in essence, the heart and soul of a whole lot of voter ID laws banging around out there. All I can do is thank God. Or somebody or something. That John Roberts had the good sense, along with his colleagues, the rest of the rats on the Supreme Court, had the good sense to strike down the Voting Rights Act. So that maybe Mr. Golden Snerdley's good old days could make a comeback in America. Could maybe be great again. Oh, okay, thank you to Ron and Raleigh. The so-called liberal on Fox is Bob Beckel, half in the bag blustering on the five with that group of twits. Well, see, and that's my point. He's not anchoring, holding down a program. Tim from L.A., noting, Elizabeth Hasselbeck said only 4% of the U.S. citizens knew the first 10 amendments were called the Bill of Rights. Funny thing, 100% of all immigrants obtaining their citizenship know that answer. So I guess that means that immigrants are smarter, or maybe the Fox News viewers shouldn't vote so much, once again, notes Tim, for American exceptionalism. Marty pointing out it's rather amusing that now Radio Rwanda speaks against standardized testing when they championed it in No Child Left Behind. Now they see it as limiting students' potential. Well, of course. Literacy tests were forbidden after the 15th Amendment, Marty. Who are you going to get to enforce that? And on the topic of the golden years, Philip writing in, I defer to Dr. John to better articulate what I find to be the root of Mr. Golden's and his ilk's fears, if he agrees with me, but to me it all boils down to a religious aversion to sexuality and sex for pleasure. From the beginning, jazz was described as chaotic and having strange jungle-influenced rhythms. The same theme was the basis for the denunciation of rhythm and blues and rock and roll. By the way, the Muscle Shoals band was predominantly white, just ask Steve Cropper. I know. And white writers like Doc Pomus and Dan Penn wrote many a soul or rhythm and blues lyric that was interpreted by African-American singers. Women and their allegedly uncontrollable, or better said, independent sexuality requires suppression, whether one goes to the extreme of female circumcision or imposed rigid constraints on reproductive freedom and access to birth control and abortions. Add to that the uppityness of Obama, a representative of the failure of African Americans to not take it sufficiently slow in the, that's called with all deliberate speed, Philip, thank you, slowly in the pursuit of equality and human rights in this disunited States, and you have a nightmare. That is a nightmare for Fox, Golden, and Elizabeth Hasselbeck. Oh, my God, we've got a new name. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, the loss of control and the defiance of those who don't subscribe to their repressive beliefs. As for me, Phillips notes, having been married for 26 years, I'm living with the constraints of acceptable morality. Sure, there's the leather and whips, but a husband must have his fantasies, right? But here's the deal, Mr. Golden. I will gladly tell my loins and associated member to adhere to your morality if you pay them unemployment while they are out of work, so to speak. Lottie, Lottie, Miss Claudie, what would we do without the religious rights, hatred of human sexuality and diversity? If only Mr. Golden's parents had been less sexually active, we might have been spared. Be well, spiritually, of course, signed, Philip. Carol with an inquiry. If they can't pass a civics test over at Fox, can we revoke their citizenship? I'm asking for a friend. Oh, mercy. I don't know. Let's finish the Elizabeth Hasselbeck clip and find out.
It's a more meaningful measure when you vote, perhaps, too. That's great that you do that. You know, so some test examples here. Who's in charge of the executive branch? You know, when you look at the
Kenya.
Number of answers right, it's sort of disheartening. The House of Representatives has how many voting members? Answer there, of course, is 435. Who wrote the Declaration of Independence? Thomas Jefferson is the answer, in case you're wondering at home. But when you look at how many people get those answers wrong, how concerning is it to you that those very people are voting?
Of course, there's the larger question of, does one need to know that there are 435 members in the House if the one you have to worry about says things like cast aspersions upon my asparagus or describes illegal aliens with calves the size of cantaloupes? I mean, is Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence a sine qua non to being able to know whether or not to vote for someone who thinks that poor people eating food in this country is some sort of communist scheme to engage in confiscatory taxation of all our wealth? Or that Agenda 21 will make commie atheists of us all? I mean, there's a bit of a dichotomy at work here, because actually, here on the left, what left? We say things like people vote against their own interests, or they vote against their own wallet. And we say things like people aren't well enough informed as to what those family values Republicans really mean to do to them when they get to Washington. So oddly enough, our side should be the ones, you would think, saying, you know what? Let's do smarten up the chumps. But again, what Elizabeth Hasselbeck just alluded to is turning the franchise into a trivia game. Who played the Cisco Kid, right?
Well, you know, personally, that's why I think it's so critical that we begin this conversation. And I think this is the one step in the right direction. And that's why we're asking local government, local states, to decide what they want to do with this. And obviously, you
This is a discussion about effing civics, and there's been no mention whatsoever of the constitutionality of any of this. Now, we got 45 seconds left. Maybe Elizabeth Hasselbeck. I'm just loving that name, Philip. I am loving that name. Thank you. Maybe she's going to work it in the next 45 seconds. My money's on no.
No. I just wouldn't understand, to begin to understand, how we could be engaged citizens and voting if we don't know the history, how our government works. And I think this is something very important for all of us as Americans.
Sure, we should want to know it, perhaps. We want to know what everyone thinks out there who's watching right now at Fox and Friends. We want to thank both Lorena and Whitney for joining us today for this very civilized debate.
What was that about, this very civilized debate? Is that a subtle dig at Whoopi or something for handing her ass all those mornings? Nope. No mention of the constitutionality question of imposing, putting roadblocks in front of the franchise. Nothing, nil, nada. Of course not. A little bit of breaking news coming from Carol. Breaking news for eighth graders debating the constitutionality of Obamacare. A federal appeals court just threw out a lawsuit by a group of conservative doctors who sued the Obama administration for violating Obamacare by delaying the employer mandate. In their decision, the court noted that eighth graders should be more worried about acne and masturbation than Obamacare. They're kids, not constitutional lawyers. Amen. I got civics in ninth grade. I took it in summer school, the summer ahead of ninth grade, because there was more learning I wanted to be doing in high school, and civics was only a semester, so we got rid of civics. Because ninth grade in Alabama, back in the dim, dark ages of which we speak here, which would be the late 70s, Alabama history was taught in one semester and civics was taught in the next, or vice versa. Because the whole of American government can easily be encapsulated within the space between Labor Day and letting out for Christmas break. Ron with a note. Different Ron. This is not Ron and Raleigh. Voting rights. I suspect that if we had a real literacy test in order to get the right to vote, we would disenfranchise more of those on the right than those on the left. That would make it a commie plot, huh? Yeah, but, you know, that's that Stalin-esque thing about I don't care who votes, I care who counts the votes, Ron. If the test is all right-wing trivia, then a bunch of us are going to fail it. See what I mean? Oh, thanks very kindly to ASA for jumping in and getting fundraising started this evening. It is most appreciated. So now we're looking for ASA's looking for some friends to help him fill in a $65 gap. Roger kindly, hearing about the Ozark gift basket that Carol had put forward, Roger kicked in for that specifically and said, have Carol send it to you, Bob. I want to hear the review. Thank you, Roger, and thank you, ASA. So $65 to go to finish fundraising for this evening. Ron and Raleigh. The Cisco Kid was played by Duncan Ronaldo, who was Romanian. Leo Carrillo played Pancho. He was 70 years old at the time. The Cisco Kid was the first TV show shot entirely in color, indeed. Oh, he did. He did. He absolutely did, Carol. A reminder, though, now that the Ozark gift basket has gone the way of all flesh, actually, it's going to West Virginia, then that means that we do still have a premium out there, and that is Sparky's Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese Pistachio Challenge. Anybody that wants to pony up $100 gets a gift box from Sparky, your choice of pistachios grown right there, not far at all from where Sparky resides, or Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese, which is hotter than hell in a heat wave, I might add. Your choice, PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. And you know from Tim, you know from Sal, you know from me, you know from Ferg, and you know from Jim in Louisiana Stan, we ain't kidding when we say it's hot. All right, then. Here endeth the filibobster for the evening. And we'll open up the phone lines for conversation. You know the number, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. We do not necessarily have to talk about these particular topics. I'm not that kind of talk radio egomaniac. We can talk about what's on your mind. And I welcome you to bring those things to the table. A gentle reminder, you know, we've never lost a first-time caller, as we've proven in the last few weeks. It would be if you've been thinking about calling, if you've been lurking, this is a great time, because maybe you've seen some over the weekend stupidity that the rest of us missed, and we'd like to share. 304-574-8178. Kevin in Colorado Springs pointing out, unfortunately, you're right, Bob. What these Fox News idiots are working towards is the institution of a test before being able to vote. I sigh as I can hear the amens and see the nods of approval as these Fox News people blather on. Nods from people who never experienced discrimination of any kind at any time in their white privileged lives. I'm sickened by some people's lack of critical thinking skills and their willingness to merrily run down the path of fascism and control of everything by the privileged few. They ain't running anymore, Kevin. They're sprinting. But yeah, I get your point in a big way. So if you want to light up the phone lines, you are welcome so to do. Or Skype to Skype, of course. A gentle reminder is always just Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never sent me a contact request, send one along. We'll hook up, and we'll be conversing in no time flat. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. You can also reach me on Twitter, @BobKincaid, same spelling, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. And by all means, I'm encouraging folks, join up with our Facebook page, The Head On Radio Network, The Horn. Look for it. You'll find it. Send a request. I'll approve it, or one of the other folks will. whoever gets to it first, and you'll be engaged in that conversation. Conversation never ends at the horn, unless we take a break, which we're going to do now. This just seems ever so apropos. From the Drive-By Trucker's most recent release, English Oceans. Yeah, this.
First day of autumn, up your nose. Popcorn, heavy hairspray, nylon pantyhose. We stand and bow your heads and pray you don't get old. Of your kind, the rules of only strong survive. Cross-shaped swimming pools down in the blood and lifted up, forever seeking favor from the light. Schoolhouse hallway like a prairie highway sprawls. The drop-off spins away in sun. The getting there just proves it's nothing but a ball. Pray the horizon never comes. The hearts of the daughters of the men, won by the softness of the sons of women's hands. To leave it up to love would leave it left a chance. Memory only shows the promise beauty broke, a beauty ageless in its time. Light attracts the same, you glance away and the glory fades. Being on your arm is lost in shame. Schoolhouse hallway like a prairie highway sprawls. The drop-off spins away the sun. Like eyes that once could cut through candle power on autumn nights. First air of autumn leaves me numb.
First air of autumn, that, the voice behind it being being Mike Cooley. That's and by the way, the whole album is nothing short of stunning. It's a tour de force for the Truckers. Came out a few months back. I highly recommend it. English Oceans. And there's not a weak tune on the entire compilation. I hesitate now to say album or disc or record or it's a collection of files. Jesus. Well, it's the demise of, how did we get from the good old days of gutta percha record albums to this? Let's go to the Skype line. Carol's with us. Hey, Carol.
Hey, bud. How are you tonight?
I'm among the quick.
I'm feeling so much better than I was last week.
I'm so glad, because it takes a lot to knock you off your perch.
It really does, because I was pretty quiet all weekend.
I noticed that.
I'm over it.
Well, it's Monday.
Indeed. And let me tell you something. This was two pot of coffee Monday by the time I got done really catching up on my news. The first thing that hit me was that Americans for Shared Prosperity stupid, creepy political ad. Did you see that?
No. Do I need to look it up?
If you go to my Facebook page, it's like the one thing that I posted today.
Okie doke.
They just released the most sexist, creepiest ad since the Uncle Sam at the gynecologist office between the woman's legs.
Which was pretty goddamn creepy all by itself.
This is pretty creepy. There's a woman who, like, goes, she starts out by acting like she answered a personal ad from Barack Obama. And in the beginning, he was so polite and articulate, and he said he'd take care of me, and now I've got two more years that I'm stuck with him, and I can't get away. And I'm sitting there going, bitch, the man you're really in love with is George W. Bush. He's the guy who trashed your economic world for you, and you want to blame somebody else. The guy you're really in love with was the guy who set it all up so that your phone calls and emails and text messages could be monitored. And you want to blame somebody else. The man you're really in love with was the guy who promised to keep us safe and ignored the warnings. You know, bin Laden determined to attack within the U.S. And she wants to blame somebody else. And she said that the only thing that Barack Obama was interested in was giving her free birth control. And I thought, well, if you believe that, then you weren't paying attention to who was really fucking you, lady.
Oh, God. I mean, not the use of the word, but... Well, is it me? Is it you? Is it us, Carol? Or are these people coming completely undamn glued?
They're completely unglued because after 6 years.
I mean, the little linoleum tiles are just popping off the kitchen floor like popcorn.
I'm serious. I when she was sitting there going, you promised me you'd keep me safe, and now I'll never live long enough to pay off the debt you settled me with. And I'm going, he's not the one who rang up two wars and a Medicare drug plan on the national credit card.
Well, I've got it here. Can we take a moment and run the audio?
Oh, play it, please.
Okay. Well, it seems obvious to me, Carol, that duct tape and hockey puck admonition is in order. But yeah, with that having been said, here it goes.
In 2008, I fell in love. His online profile made him seem so perfect. Smart, handsome.
Oh, Carol, we're not going to be able to get through this with it. The pearls! The pearls, Carol, the pearls!
And the white couch in the white room. The little subtle clues.
Oh God, here we go. And yes, the pink pinstripe overstripe mannish shirt.
Yeah.
Oh God. All right, I'll be back.
Charming, articulate, all the right values. I trusted him. But by 2012, our relationship was in trouble. But I stuck with him because he promised he'd be better. He's great at promises. He told me we'd be safe. Have you looked at the news? He's in my emails and text messages, spying on me but ignoring real threats. He said that we'd finally get on our feet financially. I'll never pay down what he spent. He thinks the only thing I care about is free birth control, but he won't even let me keep my own doctor. I know I'm stuck with Barack for 2 more years. I get that. But I'm not stuck with his friends. I'm looking for someone who gets that this isn't about him. It's about us.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where's the candidate's name? Is this just, I mean, because...
This scary black guy lied to me online. That's because she doesn't know the difference between Match.com and a fucking ballot. That's not my problem, okay? And if you're not in a satisfying relationship with him, then you better look at the 233 guys in the bar cock-blocking him. Oh, that's not a bar. It's the United States House of Representatives. Those are Republicans.
Oh, she shoots, she scores. Oh, my. No, oh, yeah. This is just wildly disturbing. And yeah, there are all kinds of little subtle visual clues. We're talking about video on the radio, and I understand that's mm-hmm. contradictory, but they're all there. By the way, this has now been viewed 86,664 times. And the funny thing about, you know, you can up and down vote a video on YouTube. Usually this right-wing garbage, you know, there's just a few liberals who have popped by to downvote it. But it's 346 to 203. It's basically broken out in very similar percentages to the Congress. Oy.
Is that not creepy?
And of course, you know, there's no disclaimer under it, Carol. It says paid actress.
No.
So and you know, if you go to what was his name at Atla World Missionary Church in Harlem, you know. Barack Obama has probably, you know, 952,000 mistresses. I don't know how many times I've stood there in the grocery line next to the Weekly World News or the Inquirer or the Introspect or whatever it is. Michelle furious with Barack, divorce imminent, other woman involved. and yet, this is, to be fair, this is an administration that's had a whole lot of people not go to prison as compared to, say, Dim Leader's administration or, you know, Daddy Bush's administration or the granddaddy of them all, Ronald Reagan, where felonies were resume pads. So
I just wanted to shake her and go, lady, the guy wearing the wife beater looks a hell of a lot like George W. Bush.
Yeah, Carl from, Cartoon Network. Yeah.
You're not talking about Carl Rove, are you?
Well, I don't know why they named him Carl. The wife beater with the curly little chest hairs and the gold chains and the Jersey accent.
Yeah, Carl Rove's still in the basement at Fox News waiting for the Ohio returns to come in.
God. But no, I mean, they are coming uneffing glued.
I know.
And, I caught some of it over the weekend and squirreled them away for more on Monday. Here's this creature over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda named Tracy Burns. Did you catch this one?
No.
Tracy is very upset. Let's let her speak for herself.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, strap in.
The ISIS border threat we may all regret if we don't stop it now. The head of a federal immigration workers union warning that ISIS terrorists may have already crossed our southern border or will do so soon. And one Republican lawmaker saying four people with terrorist ties may have been nabbed crossing that border earlier this month. So do we need to lock it down right now to protect our lives and livelihood right now? Hi, everyone. I'm Brenda Butner. This is Bulls and Bears. Here they are, the Bulls and Bears this week. Gary B. Smith.
No, make it stop, Carol.
I was thinking the same thing.
And that is apparently the only woman who is allowed on Fox who is not blonde.
I think I saw a little. Somebody sent that to me, and I wasn't up to snuff yet, and I couldn't make myself do it. And now, okay, there's a couple of things here, okay? An unnamed source, someone says there may have been, nothing is substantiated. This is supposition based on hearsay, based on a someone says.
Yeah, well, do you remember when after all the reasoning behind the Iraq war fell apart, the Bush administration came out and started describing weapons of mass destruction related program related activities?
Yeah.
This is that. But it works because I don't know how it's going there in Hooterville, But when I toddle around here, ISIS is on everybody's lips. People are afraid. I mean, you know, here in West Bicol, Virginia, I got people up to the wiggling pig who are afraid that they're going to go home and ISIS is going to be waiting on the couch to lop their little noggins off.
Yes, these people do tend to lap at the Kool-Aid trough of Fox News.
I think what scares me, Carol, is that, yeah, okay, we can probably chalk some of this up to Fox News, but last night, for instance, the serious CBS News program that's been on since 1968 had Steve Pelley interviewing Leon Panetta saying that if only Barack Obama had started bombing Syria sooner, we wouldn't have this here ISIS problem, ISIL, whatever. Do you happen to hear any of that? And he couched it in terms of, he says, now, you know, the CIA and the military and the NSA and basically all the creepy people in the administration were saying, bomb them now, got to bomb them now, mm-hmm. Don't bomb them later, got to bomb them now. And he said, and for some reason, the president just decided not to go with us. Well, I mean, could there be a reason, Carol? Could it have something to do with the fact that the last time we listened to the American intelligence community, we went chasing after, what was his name, Knuckleball, Screwball, dude lived under a bridge in Mosul drinking screw-top wine, and mm-hmm. we relied on him for our intel?
Yeah. I stopped watching 60 Minutes after that Laura, whatever her name was, came on with that fake Benghazi story, and she got to go, oops, sorry, and that was pretty much the end of it. So I'm sitting there going, Dan Rather nails W dead to rights, and because he reported it before he could prove it, and it was later proven,
yeah.
He got run out of journalism, and
run plumb out.
Yeah, and some blonde fluff who has a right-wing husband who works for the wackiest of the far right, and she gets to just shrug her shoulders and go, I screwed up. And that's the end of it. And I can't, 60 Minutes is a shadow of its former self. It has the name, and that's it.
You mean kind of like Meet the Press?
Meet John McCain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the best part, you know, we stopped before it got any crazier. But this woman over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda took it a step further. Here's the poll quote, courtesy of Heather over at Crooks and Liars. It's really serious, and this has been something that has been bothering me for a while now. We are not taking it serious enough. ISIS is here. I don't care what anybody says. They're here. And what scares me the most, Brenda, is that they infiltrate the minds of children. And when children cross the border, everyone, you know, the tears start coming down. We want to take care of them, but so many of these kids are trained to hate us and eventually kill us. And yet we're just letting them in, welcoming them with open arms, paying for their medical, paying for everything, and it's just going to come back and bite us. Geez, build a wall, not a fence. Build anything you have to protect this country. So, I mean, let's just do a quick walkthrough here, Carol, because it's going to be so much fun. ISIS.
I was beating my head on the desk.
I understand. The bruising is hell. So ISIS is going to Guatemala and El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going mano a mano with a bunch of drug cartel guys that would send ISIS screaming, wetting themselves into the night.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the ones who are managing to infiltrate the minds of the little children who are... Oh, my God. I mean, stop it. Ain't enough liquor.
No. And it's... I have my days where I can sit and watch that stuff and scream at the television, and then I have 3 or 4 days where I really don't feel good and I can't make myself, I won't submit myself to that on top of being sick. So, I just, I look at it and I'm like, it is so ridiculous. They have no proof of any of it. They say, they're here, I know they're here, no matter what anybody tells me. In other words, no amount of facts will change my mind. When you've gotten to that point, then you no longer need to be on television talking.
And yet, if Bishop Willard McCain can somehow miraculously be inaugurated on January the 20th, 2017, we will never hear another word about them.
Nope.
You know who it reminds me of? I mean, and this just struck me the other day. The ISIS thing reminds me, because they are such a bunch of, pants wetting babies. This is the first thing. It just grabbed me. Do you remember the great, great, maybe a relative term, but do you remember the Disney incarnation of Winnie the Pooh?
No.
I mean, there were so many cute voices done. Well, this right here. And woozles.
I'm going to go take up drinking after that.
Wait till you see the animation.
Do they all look like Obama?
I did notice that there were these little moments in Disney. I did notice that the first reference to Heffalumps and Woozles was that they were black and brown.
I thought that's what I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're gonna drag us normal people with them, Carol.
No, they're not.
They're trying. I mean, these people. Did you happen to catch the boots segment from Fox where they were talking about boots on the ground?
Yes.
And this is this is a combat boot. This is a special forces boot. Well, these are probably the special forces boots, and they're already on the ground. Has this entire nation been quietly going about the business of smoking the really good shit that reduces your short-term memory to not being able to remember which flavor ramen you had for lunch?
No, this is the result of the nation smoking the really bad shit.
Yeah, okay, paraquat, right.
Ditchweed.
Because see, I'm pretty sure that a few years back we got tired of having our children and brothers and sisters and what come home in cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
And we decided that being lied into a war wasn't a good idea. I'm struggling here to sort out is it a matter of the right wing just wants to get Barack Obama into a war so that they can then impeach him for getting into a war that they wouldn't impeach George Bush for? Is that because I'm trying to play 11-dimensional chess on this, and I keep coming up checkers.
No, I keep getting the impression that they're trying to bully him into a war so that Dick Cheney et al. can start raking in the big bucks again and lose a billion here and a billion there. And then when the national, they're trying to run up the national debt. See, Obama got us into a war. Obama started the, stopped the other one too soon and ended up getting us into another one. Look at what the national debt has done as a result of this.
So are we to understand that Cheney and that gang already ran through the last trillion?
Well, yeah, but that doesn't matter because they don't have everything yet. They've got 99% of everything, but they got to squeeze that last 1% out, you know, because we can't truly kill all the social programs until we've diverted every last penny to the military-industrial complex. Until we kill Social Security and all food stamps and every social program out there, and divert every last penny of that to the military and to those contracts, they're not going to be happy. They're not happy with more obscene amounts of money than they can ever hope to spend. They want it all.
They want it all.
They do want it all.
But how much left? Really, in 2014, and better than halfway done with the year, how much left is there for them to get?
I remember, like, maybe 5 years ago, that the top 15% had, like, 85% of all the material wealth in this country. And they've gotten, like, another third of that. So we're down to, like, them having 90% of everything, which leaves the bottom 15% of us scrapping over 10% of every last cent of all the material goods in this country. That's a lot of people fighting over some very scarce resources. And then people wonder why there's such divisiveness in America. But when you have that many people fighting over such a tiny amount of resources, this is the result, and this is what they want. They've divided and conquered and done it very effectively, and the more I refer to it as death by a thousand paper cuts. You know, they kill us on Social Security, they go after us on abortion, they go after us on healthcare, they literally attack us in every facet that affects our lives, and we're trying to fight them on so many fronts. It's like death by a thousand paper cuts.
And meanwhile, I suppose there are real threats out there, Carol. Just had a question come in from Frank via email. Frank says, after hearing about the extra threats from ISIS and some concerns about possible sympathizers they may have here, I was wondering this. We all know what's been done to protect the airlines, but what about nuclear areas? I'm wondering about the reactors, waste depositories, and research labs. Have these been given extra security, or are they ignored or staffed with an occasional elderly rent-a-cop?
I don't know.
We do have some people who work kind of close to the industry. Maybe one of them's listening this evening. Maybe we'll get an answer. But I know, for instance, and not that everything is always about mountaintop removal with me, but that, you know, that's my métier. I know, for instance, that, you know, peaceniks like me who go around and try to take pictures of these places, you know, they've got a guard shack at the foot of the road that is staffed by a guy who couldn't chase down Fat Albert.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I'm not fat shaming. I'm just saying if they were in good shape, they'd be cops.
Yeah.
Or better shape, they'd be cops. And not to give anybody any ideas, but, you know, there's a lot of potential there. Not to say that the coal companies aren't doing an adequate job of guarding tons and tons and tons and tons of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil or anything, but, well, yeah. So there's no way of knowing. And that's the thing, you know, this goofy person over at Fox is worried that that ISIL is coming for her. And
I think when they come after us, Bob, it's going to be much more insidious than that. I don't think they'll go for the obvious, like the nuclear power plants. I think with the scarcity of water in this country, all they would have to do would be to introduce something into a couple of major metropolitan water supplies.
Assuming that some American corporation doesn't beat them to it.
Well, that's in your area. That's. But I'm talking about going to like New York City or someplace like that and introducing something really bad into the drinking water supply, because I think those are probably even less carefully protected.
Yeah. I got a note here from Philip saying the problem is not terrorists sneaking into the country. It's terrorists sneaking into the country without invitation of our knowledge. Depending on one's definition, terrorists such as Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, Ayman de Valera, Itzhak Shamir, Jerry Adams, Martin McGuinness, and, of course, longtime terrorists Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki were all welcomed into this country. If only ISIL would tell us their names and not look so much like other brown peoples coming over the border. It's so confusing. Signed, yours in fear that ISIL may strike West Virginia or Maryland. Hell, if they aim their missiles correctly, they could take out the NSA complex 10 miles from my home. Philip. It really is. It's all in how you define them.
I like you, Philip.
Philip is a pearl of great price. But just to return to the larger theme, Carol, how do you unpants wet an entire country?
I don't know, because I don't think that there are enough depends to go around. Seriously, these people are so. They live in, and I'm sitting there, I'm trying so hard to think about when in our history has it ever been like this before, because it has to have. I'm just not old enough to know. And I was watching that PBS, Ken Burns thing on, the Roosevelts.
Yeah.
And there was a good deal of that in that period of time that went on too. And that's how the Japanese ended up in internment camps, and, Germans were resoundingly mistrusted and things like that. But now we just have the benefit of the electronic world where so much disinformation can be disseminated in such a broad spectrum of arenas so quickly.
Well, and see, that's always been our fear. The two things you cited, the racist mistreatment of Japanese Americans and the racist mistreatment of perfectly loyal German Americans, mm-hmm. one during the Second World War and the other more during the First than the Second. Those we've always had a longstanding paranoia of internal dissent, going all the way back to the Alien and Sedition Acts of John Adams.
Mm-hmm.
His administration.
Mm-hmm.
But being afraid of somebody else, I mean, this country was sort of, we sort of made our bones on, you know, we'll fuck with anybody on the planet we want to, because, you know, we're us.
Mm-hmm.
All the way back to, you know, and Jefferson was such a little peacenik until he got into the White House, and the next thing you know, our infant U.S. Navy is sailing for Tripoli.
Yeah.
Because we were going to go over and kick some serious ass. And in the all I can figure is in the course, because I don't think it was born out of the Cold War. You remember the Cold War? I remember the Cold War. And the Cold War was, F 'em, by God, them Ruskies come across, we're ready. And, you know, in the 80s, you get terrible movies, you know, which I continually mock, like Red Dawn, you know, Wolverines and all of that shit. You know, we were ready. We were going to empty out the high schools and wipe out the Red Menace.
Oh yeah.
And now, so I don't think this is one I can blame on Reagan. This seems to be a new century problem, where we're also, and I'm not sure what we're afraid of. I mean, is this an outgrowth of the so-called end of the Cold War? Because on the one hand, and this is where it gets crazy, and our buddy Bill has pointed this out. On the one hand, you've got people running around this country afraid that they're going to get their heads cut off in their sleep by ISIL. But on the other hand, you've got the same right-wingers, by God, and you know, they want to go toe-to-toe with the Ruskies and defend poor little, you know, poor little fascist, Nazi-occupied Ukraine.
But then pile on a resurgence of religious fundamentalism.
Well, and I think maybe that's somewhere it comes from, because oddly enough, we're terrified of the Muslims, but we're not scared of a highly trained, highly effective Russian fighting force.
Then we should stop, toppling leaders from governments that we don't like and replacing them with dictators that we do like for the moment, because historically we really suck at it. And we end up causing problems that we end up having to go back and fix later on. Shah of Iran, anyone?
Yeah. Anybody happen to remember, and I know this is ancient history and everything, anybody happen to remember why it was that the hostages got taken at our embassy got overrun in Iran?
Didn't he pump nerve gas into a movie theater or something and kill a bunch of his own people?
And this was the Carter administration, in a humane gesture, allowed the Shah of Iran to come to New York for cancer treatment, I guess, at Cedars-Sinai.
I remember that.
And that drove, and that was just deeply insulting to the revolutionaries who had run that brutal dictator out of town. And so we wound up with a hostage crisis. Once again, you know, foreign policy, not our A game. But,
no.
But that, you know, that's where that comes from. And then there's Ronald Reagan, uber patriot, who put 200 Marines in the barracks in Lebanon when his admirals were telling him, and his generals, you know, let's keep them on the carriers offshore, because we can get them anywhere they need to go faster from there than we can from the barracks. And Ronnie said, no, we need to show the flag, put them in the barracks, and don't let them load their weapons. No shit, those 200 Marines were slaughtered in Beirut without bullets in their guns.
Yeah,
you know, said the peacemaker.
I do not remember. I swear, I get that the whole menopause thing has jacked with my memory, but I don't remember there being Beirut hearings. I don't remember hearing people going Beirut, Beirut, Beirut the way they go Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi.
No.
And that was a genuine, total, just clusterfuck of stupidity that was completely avoidable.
All right, so why don't we do that? Because they're still hooting Benghazi. Is it not possible for us to? I mean, could we maybe sneak somebody into one of these discussions with these miserable right wing jackasses? And every time they say Benghazi, we holler Beirut.
But that's when their eyes roll up into the back of their heads. And they go, oh, you typical liberal, every time we nail you for something, you come back with 30-year-old ancient history. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, and it's pertinent because that's how history gets repeated, is by ignoring it and not taking any of the lessons out of it.
Well, see, that's because there was a Democratic majority in the Congress at that time, and they're a bunch of sissy appeasers. But if we'd had good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian Republicans in the House back then, well, by God, we'd have had some hearings on Ronald Reagan, not.
Bullshit.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
right,
I had something
exactly.
In my throat.
Yeah. Right. Moran Mondays are a little bit tough sometimes, Carol.
I know. I'm going to let somebody else hop in here, but I had to share that. I had to share that creepy-ass video with you.
Oh, that's I needed that little interlude of manifest insanity this evening.
Yeah, I encourage everybody to take a look at it, vote it down, and I'm working on a video response to it.
Oh, I can't wait because that will be a beautiful thing. You know, the only thing that would have made this thing more lovely is if she had actually clutched the pearls.
Well, she did have on a pearl necklace, so I'm sorry, but that was funny. Because I'm sitting there going, yeah, honey, you had your eyes closed and you didn't see who put it there.
Yeah. See, you get to do that. I can't.
Oh, yes, I can.
Yes, you can. Well, say hi to the gang in Hooterville. Tell Mr. Drucker that you'll be bringing a package along there to his post office in short order.
Okay, I'll climb the pole and make the call.
All right, sounds good, Carol. Take care.
Take care, buddy.
Bye now.
Night.
Oh, our pal Carol Baker. Find her on Facebook. She was feeling poorly over the weekend. She posts a bunch, Carol does. And when she doesn't, you know something, you know she's being knocked down. But she's back. Oh, God. I forget. Well, just look. It's the only post there for a while. If you look on her Facebook page, you'll find it, the AFP thing. Oh, my God. It is Moran Monday, and I heartily welcome any and all conversation, your nominees, and that AFP one is a strong one. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
What's happening?
Hi, this is Todd. How you doing?
I'm good, Todd. I thought that was you.
Hey, listen, I love Carol, man. I don't know her. I think I remember her saying that she had a career in radio. She has a wonderful radio voice.
She does, and she has done radio in the past, and it kind of shows.
And I mean, I've never met the woman, obviously, but seems like her karma, her spirit comes through in a positive way, you know.
Well, you have, and I mean, the combination of biting wit and good humor cannot be overstated, Todd, because sometimes you have to be able to laugh through some of this insanity. You know, I wish, oh how I wish. This was a real viable operation, because I've got a list of people that I would just mail the equipment to and say, you know, the check will be monthly, and you know what, we'd knock stuff out of the park. But as it stands, you know, here
that's exactly what I was going to say. See, you two play off each other very well, very well.
But you know, here we are on a Monday evening, and I can't get any buddies for Ace's 65 to finish off the $65 we got fundraising out there. Oh well.
Is it a match?
No, it's not. It's not a match. It's just that's what we got left. Asa, Roger took care of the first half. Asa came along and did 10, and now we need $65 more.
Well, who knows? A magic elf might come along. But I have a couple questions. I'm a little confused.
Welcome to the party.
I mean, you know, like, I don't know. I called you last week, and it was. The FCC, some guy with a dark suit and a buzz haircut knocked on my door, so I'm not going to be
Did you tell him to piss off? This is the interweb tubes. We can say what we want to.
No, they said they're gearing up for this non-neutrality, so, you know. But seriously, what is up, what the heck was Hasselbeck intimating that states need to look at this, revisit this?
No, was saying straight up she wants a civics test before anybody can vote.
Does she understand the implications of that? She's a mental giant when you compare her to a tapeworm with a lobotomy, you know. But aside from that, I mean, where does she get off with that?
Well, it comes from the same pernicious place where all the right-wing ideas come from. You know, Karl Rove's E. coli-infested bowel. No, Republicans understand, right-wingers understand, that they cannot succeed if lots of people get out there voting. And so, consequently, this is their goal. They recognize that the demographics are shifting in this country, being white is going to be a minority in very short order. And so they're doing everything that they can to, you know, to burn the building down before those people get it.
Well, that
I mean, if you're a white minority, the only way to maintain control is to figure out some way to let the white folks vote and nobody else.
Yeah, but see, I'm really not going to keep you. But see, this is what the problem is that it's the same dynamic when the schools got integrated and a lot of white folks pulled their kids out of school. You know, they said, well, you know what, then fuck it. I mean, then forget about it. We're just going to, you know, we're not going to participate. And when I say the same dynamic, this is what the House is doing with this current administration. Saying, okay, fine. No funding for you. You know, we'll say no to everything. You know, and so nothing happens. And when I say that, what I mean is that so goes the president, so goes the country. So, you know, we don't like you, so we don't care what happens to the country. We don't care what happens.
No, well, because the country, as they understand it, is going away, which means it's not going to be the country anymore. The country is defined by the polity that was run by an essentially white power structure.
Well, that shit, look, the tube is out of the toothpaste. That shit is stale. It's a done deal now anyway. So, I mean,
it's not to them because they have formulated a plan, Todd, by which they will maintain power. And it is by keeping those people from manifesting their uppityness at the polling place.
Well, you see, that's what scares me is about what Dr. Bill had to say. You asked me about him last time I talked to you. And I recalled one of the episodes I listened to. It's a little frightening, and I hate to talk about it in a way because I don't want too many people to know about it. But this Constitutional Convention, they've just about sealed. See, the Heritage, that jackass Jim DeMint over at the Heritage, they're not stupid people. They have an agenda. You know, they have an agenda. And if they can get, they're almost there with the state, like Dr. Bill was saying. You understand what I mean?
Oh, yes, I do. I absolutely do.
It's frightening.
And no, they're not dumb over at the Heritage Foundation. It just seemed... It's easy to look at their antiquated sort of Confederate notions and not think it's dumb, but they've got an agenda, and they've figured out a way to advance it, and they're succeeding. I mean, there are going to be, well, assuming that anybody reports on it, and it will be reported on, you know, Brad Friedman will be all over it, some other, you know, other members of the non-traditional, not-for-profit media will be on it. There's going to be voting irregularities. There will be more voting irregularities than regularities come this November.
Oh, why did you have to bring that up?
I keep ruining stuff for you.
No, I was really not going to have to go here, but you brought it up, and maybe you remember. Now the second time, the presidential election, the second time, okay, 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl, I believe it was Leslie. No, it wasn't Leslie, it was Steve Croft. He's on the bus with John Boehner. And John Boehner, you know, he had a couple glasses in the low or whatever, and that's fine, whatever. But he was so smug, and she was like, are you going to, is Ohio, do you have Ohio? And he said, oh, don't worry about Ohio. And then on the backstory about Ohio was that, you know, the Diebold, the people had finagled a way to rig these electronic voting machines. And that's the same reason Karl Rove had the meltdown with Megyn Kelly. See, a lot of people didn't put one and two and two together. We got to get rid of these electronic voting machines because he was so smug, he was so sure they had Ohio, which, you know, obviously is a hint.
And then the guy who was responsible for the Bush campaign over there, after years of being a successful private pilot, mysteriously gets in his plane to fly to Washington, D.C. and just right into the, just corkscrews into the dirt.
Exactly. So,
but before that, I mean, I remember the 2000 election, and I remember the live shot of Bush in Texas sitting there with Jebby and creepy old Daddy and Carl. Isn't that who all was in the room? I can't remember if the Quaker Oats man, George's mama, was in there. better she than me. But you know, the announcement was made that Gore, that Florida was being called for Gore, and Jeb said, what?
Right.
And right. Then, you know, oh, this won't last.
So, you know, which it's frightening, but this is why this election is really more important than the last presidential election. This is really, really important. I'm trying to get everybody I know to really, and you know, it's difficult here. You know, Kakalaki, it's difficult.
Oh, I'll be curious come November to have a report of your attempt at voting.
Yeah. I have a story for you later on for that. Yeah. You know, the sheriff here, you have to be affiliated with a political party for sheriff. And so when you go to vote, they have quote-unquote open elections, which means you say, hey, you know, they know what you're registered as. So you go in and they give you the little electronic thing, they plug it in the machine, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't see the sheriff on my ballot. And they said, oh, no, you're a registered Democrat. I was like, well, what's that got to do with the sheriff? The sheriff can arrest me. It doesn't matter what party I'm on.
Well, but was that a primary or a general?
This is the primary.
Yeah, well, see, the sheriff's not going to, I mean, if the Democrats weren't running a sheriff, you didn't get a sheriff vote.
Well.
I mean, because primary, technically, primaries, and a lot of folks really don't get this, primaries are nominating conventions done by ballot. And so, you know, if you're a Democrat and there's nobody running as the Democratic nominee for sheriff, he doesn't show up on your ballot.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I learned something.
Voting in the Democratic primary in South Carolina must be, I'd imagine there's a lot of empty spaces on that ballot.
Oh, it's pathetic. It's pathetic.
Now, the fun part, on the other hand, the fun part of running in a state that doesn't have any Democrats is that most anybody can be the nominee. File, pulse, pay the money, you're on the ballot. You win. You win the Democratic primary. And you get to sit there and hector your Republican idiot all the way to November.
Now, that's a
closed primary. In an open primary state, and I'm surprised maybe South Carolina has them.
That's what I'm saying. It's an open primary.
Well, so I mean, you have to tell them which ballot you want. If you want to vote in the Republican primary, you can as a Democrat. But if you're a registered Democrat and you vote in the Democratic primary, well, it's just not a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Unless there's somebody maybe running. Maybe you want to make sure that the right, maybe somebody's got a vague chance of beating, say, Senator Graham Cracker. And you want to make sure that, you know, one out of 13 people running for the Democratic nomination for Senate is that the right one gets to oppose Lindsey. Then you want in that. You want to participate in that primary.
Yeah, well, the system is very convoluted here. There's no logic to it, and it's just, you know, it's rigged up because they know the constituency that they have, and they know what they're dealing with. It's a mess. But I'm listening to what you're saying, and Dr. Bill is really, he's the bomb, he's all that. But you know, when you were talking about the fright, the scare tactics, And I don't get it. I'm not scared at all because, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, but, you know, when you go to Southern California and everybody knows there's tunnels everywhere. So if these folks really wanted to get us, they would have gotten us by now. It's a ghost. It's a moneymaker, you know. It's a moneymaker because those folks have our weapons. Where are they getting the ammunition? We have to make the ammunition to load our own weapons. They have the weapons. You know, this is as old as Methuselah, you know, this trick. And, you know, back to what you say, back to the money. That's all it's about.
Well, sure. Yeah. I don't know. This is the fact that the right wing is getting their ISIL hissy on and at the same time, a guy managed to scale the fence of the White House this weekend and make it into the White House. Did you catch that?
Yeah, of course. Well, absolutely. I mean, where's the NSA? Why are they in our privacy? We have no privacy yet. Every time the FBI says they're uncovering something, they've goaded someone into that. You know, they entice them with money and weapons. But it's not a real security breach. Of course. And then they said the White House door was open. I mean, what is going on? What is going on? And I want to leave a question. What is going on?
I can channel my inner paranoid real quick, Todd, and note that, well, let's just remember the code name that the Secret Service gave to Barack Obama was, as soon as he was elected, was Renegade.
Oh. Okay.
And it's a song about a man being hanged. You know, lynched.
Oh, great. Really, you had to go there, really?
Sorry.
Come on, Bob, I'm about to eat, man.
No, dude, you know, this is my world you called into, okay?
Good grief. You know.
And you know, the if there's anything funny to be had out of this, the geniuses over at The Onion now have a story up, Obama sleeping with Louisville Slugger under bed now.
Oh, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is bizarre world now. I just don't know what to say.
You know, I look at the little right-wingers here in West Bicol, Virginia, Todd, and I explain to them that I would be a lot happier if Barack Obama was the liberal they think he is. And then I explain to them, I'm a liberal. Actually, I'm not a liberal. I'm a hell of a lot more radical than that. And he's not. Not even remotely.
No.
And then I start ticking off the things that prove that he isn't. But I worry. Honest to God, Todd, I worry. I worry about this man. I worry about this man finishing out his term. Because you don't know how many weirdos are being radicalized by the likes of the Beckerhead and, you know, Alex Jones. Not to mention the Limbaugh crowd and the Hannity crowd. And there's no telling. But then, you know, when Clinton was done, he and Hillary went off to, you know, they didn't go back to Arkansas. Oh, no. No, they went up and got themselves, some nice digs at the end of a cul-de-sac somewhere on Long Island. Or, I don't know, is he on the mainland? I don't know where Westchester County is.
Westchester County is above New York City.
Okay, so it's on the mainland?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yes. So they did that. Where can Barack Obama go that he is not going to spend the rest of his life with a bunch of goddamn teabaggers outside of his house?
Well, I guess he's going to wherever all the other people who are gobbling up all the money are going, where there'll be fresh water that hasn't been polluted. You know, because at this point, man, we got about maybe 4.5-5 years to get this shit on course.
See, I don't think we got that long. Actually, I think depending on which shit you are describing, that train actually left the station. The People's Climate March that went down yesterday and drew in excess of 300,000 people. Well, I mean, I'm proud of it. It was an amazing display of courage and will. But, and I'm not naysaying it, and I'm not poo-pooing it, okay? But at this point in time, talking about the climate, We're asking for the government to not let it get it any worse than it already is and is going to be. Because there's a hell of a lot of climate scientists out there that say we've passed the tipping point.
Yeah, I heard that. I listened to the Green Report. You know,
and you know where our military theory and presence is concerned, that horse got out of the barn in March of 2003 at the very latest, and here we go again.
I just don't know. It baffles me. It baffles me because when you have all these skyscrapers, like in here down to the capital, Columbia, you know, you have, there's no competing tree. Any skyscraper, you got no competing trees. It should be mandatory that you need to have solar panels on your roof. And what that would do, is immediately you would be able to beef up your economies of scale for producing solar panels.
Okay, before economies of scale. Okay, we're getting into economic gobbledygook. You mean job creating?
Well, yes, exactly.
Okay, take a moment and imagine the introduction of a bill in the House of Representatives that provides for massive national subsidies for everybody from the poor to the rich to put solar panels on their house and pay for the installation. Now imagine the hissy by the right wing, because see, it goes a little something like this. We cannot tolerate this kind of thing. This is the kind of communist socialism, Kenyan usurpation that will destroy America and the greatness that we are. Hey, did the check clear for that trillion we wrote for the last war? Yeah. Cool. We are going to bankrupt the American budget with solar panels.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. See, they're so entrenched in the military-industrial complex, and they're not interested in doing the right thing. I don't know if I'm imagining this. Just like, I think Mitch McConnell made that statement similarly to that. You know, because in South Carolina that we had a big debate. I'm trying to get solar panels on my house, you know, and they're like, I don't know if you can sell that back to the power company. We don't know about that. I'm like, I don't care. I just want them. I need my subsidy. I want my subsidy. You know, you should be happy. This is like, you people are at war for oil, ostensibly. Right? So this is national security, right? Well,
when was the last time anybody fought a war for solar power?
Well, there you go. There you go.
I mean, the only things approaching wars that have been fought for wind power are Donald Trump getting, and that thing on his head, getting testy over wind turbines offshore of a golf course. And, of course, the spoiled babies in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, and other places who say, oh, we can't possibly tolerate those wind turbines. Muffy, darling, they're going to create viewscape pollution and we'll probably suffer debilitating chronic depression as a result of having our viewscapes poisoned. Hey, asshole, here's some coal slurry. Cheers.
Well, you know, on the bright side, it was just out. You know, one of our stations, Burlington, Vermont now, they're totally, almost totally green now. They're using biomass, solar, wind.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, and look, California, Oregon, and Washington are going to be very nearly hydrocarbon free in the next 20 years. It can be done. At that point in time, they may as, not that I'm encouraging secession or anything, they may as well be a separate country.
Oh, you know what? I'm in favor of that now. Just they need to pay me because I own property here, but they need to pay me. I think they need to be down here in South Carolina, Texas. Let them have it. Let them have it. They can have Louisiana, and they can spew all the toxins they want, and let us live. Because the only thing that's the same here as it is where I grew up is the currency. Aside from that, everything's different. It's just these people are.
Wow, I think we're going to have to award you a toaster for that one, Todd. Because everything here is different except the currency.
Well, I'm just being honest.
That's a little bit like being able to, you know, 100 years ago, that's like being able to spend a British pound in Mumbai. Everything here is different except the currency.
Well, and you know something, Bob, listen, seriously, look at American history. The left has almost always been right. Think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I constantly joke about the fact that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda doesn't have a former liberal congressman hosting their morning drive slot, to wit, Denis Kucinich. But you know, there are parts of the moderate Democratic center that get positively squeaky at the mere mention of Denis Kucinich. But the fact of the matter is, in 2000 and 2004, that man was 100% correct about everything. About health care, about jobs, about the American economy, about the stupidity and futility of warfare. He was 100% correct.
You see where that got him, don't you? He's from Ohio, near you, right? Aren't you near Ohio over there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can, if I drive all day, I can get to Ohio.
Huh.
But the thing is, there's no reward for people on the so-called left, what left, being correct. Now, you can be wrong. You can be wrong all goddamn day, Todd. You can be wrong from morning till night. You can be worse than a stopped clock and not even be right twice a day. You can be wrong for decades on end.
You mean like Dick Cheney?
And well, Dick Cheney, Bill Kristol, Tom Friedman, David Brooks, George Will, Peggy Nooner, on and on and on. And they keep writing the check. On the other hand, if somebody who is ostensibly left in a moment of heated passion says booger on air, well, you get the Johnny Fever treatment, and the next thing you know, you're doing overnights in Cincinnati. You see my point?
I see the point. I don't, you know, they get their messaging out because, all I can say is that the environment I'm in now, these people have been brainwashed. I don't know if you can hear me okay, but they've been brainwashed. And, you know, they've been saying this liberal media thing until folks really believe it. And I'm like, well, I've been to almost every state. And, I mean, I was working. I mean, I made my living for 10 years with that No Child Left Behind. I mean, I was a data collector and analyst, and then I was a media analyst. You know, so you get to see a lot. You get to be around different communities. But, you know, I love to listen to the radio, but otherwise you fall asleep when you're driving. And, you know, you hunt for some different, all you hear is you can be anywhere in this country and listen to that jackass, that fat drug addict. You know, not that drugs aren't a terrible thing sometimes, but, you know, but he's everywhere. The right talking points are everywhere. Now, if you don't have the internet or you don't have the, if you're not inclined or you don't have the motivation, you're really not going to get a different view. It's just not possible. I mean, I don't even have cable. If I had children, I would not let them watch TV. I would not. I really would not. It's too much garbage. I mean, they've got people brainwashed to just crap on TV. And they need to be listening to Dr. Bill, man. Understand, we have, I don't know.
Yeah, can you imagine? See, we talked a little bit about Elizabeth Hasselbeck wanting to everybody to have to see. Isn't that wonderful? We have Philip to thank for that.
I love that.
But we had her talking about how everybody needs to take a civics test in order to be able to vote.
Yeah.
Well, see, I would love to see Elizabeth Hasselbeck take a civics test that Dr. Bill put together.
Oh, are you kidding? Stop. That's even starting. Oh, I
love being wicked.
Again.
Yeah, I love being wicked.
Listen, she is as light as a feather mentally. And where does she get off with this nonsense? I mean, they kicked her off of The View because she was too much of a dumbass. Whoopi Goldberg probably was in the green room like, look, bitch. That is too much. But listen, I had to stop going to happy hour, man. You can't get it. It just got Fox on, these people get all hyped up on it. I've had people come to me saying, oh, well, you know, you're not a nigger. You're not like that rest of them. I'm like, really? And I look at them and I'm like, okay.
Oh, dear. No, really? Really?
I'm telling you, man, that's like anybody who, you know.
Well, I don't know if you caught the front end. I don't know if you caught the front end of the program, but you are so going to love Mr. Snerdly Golden there. And did you catch the very beginning of the program, Todd?
I caught here and there, but he's so disgusting.
The good old days of segregation?
Yeah, and in the music. See, music is what has brought people together. You know, the political strife has brought about some of the best music. I remember the first time I heard Neil Young, which I would not have been exposed to if I hadn't moved to the suburbs. And that, you know, it's a journey. A journey is a good thing. And I was like, hey, that dude has soul. You know, I mean, when I'm sipping on, I don't really drink liquor too much anymore, but you know, you get that good liquor buzz and I've got the nice JBL speakers and I sit and a couple of friends of mine and you listen to the needle and the damage done. And, you know, that's soul.
Yeah.
I don't care what color you are. That's soul.
Yeah.
But, and Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, I saw him five times before he died, and I never would have gone there. My roommate was a guitar player. He dragged me. He's like, Todd, come on, we have to go. Bard College, you know, because I was in high school up that way, Bard, and over there near New Paltz, up in the Hudson Valley, the beautiful Hudson Valley. But, and it was free the first time. And I was like, yeah, you were right. This dude is crazy. And so I'm anybody who's not seen him or does not understand about Stevie Ray Vaughan, the good ones go early. But anyway, music brings us together, not, you know, segregate. What the hell? I mean, come on. He's an idiot. He's, you know, he's a mercenary. He's getting a paycheck. See, that's the problem. People are worshiping crap and money. Where's the love?
Yeah, but see, I love the fact that he's out there mouthing Limbaugh's talking points because Limbaugh could never say those things anymore. But, you know, he's sitting across from Limbaugh. Limbaugh's making $55 million a year, and he's sitting across making maybe $50 and thrilled to have it. Of course, Limbaugh never tells anybody that he's a member of a union either.
You're
damn right he's a member of a union.
Oh, he probably is.
No, there's no probably. He has to be.
What is that? He's a Clear Channel dude, right?
Well, they're who clears his program. There's no such thing as the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. That's just another bit of shtick. His program is produced by Premier Radio Networks and cleared by a lot of Clear Channel stations. But Premier is the producing entity.
Hey, you know what, Bob? I think Richard Branson might just out of the blue give you a call.
Well, I'd love to talk to him.
You know, man, that's a wealthy person, and he doesn't get involved in this, the nonsense part. When I say nonsense, I mean these people who are grounded in things that have, there's no logic. There's no logic. There's no empirical evidence. They're just wrong. They're wrong. You know, and I mean, really, at the end of the day, things really started to fall apart when the greasy-haired dude came in. And, you know, and he was scandal-ridden, but these people worship the ground he walks on. But, you take all the personality out, just look on paper, look at what he did. BCCI, cocaine scourge because he refused to obey Congress and fly these planes down with weapons and bring cocaine back and, just a myriad of things. You know, it is disgusting. Cut it. I mean, the American worker is so efficient now. And we've gotten nothing back. And then they complain, oh, you want minimum wage?
Oh, that'll wait, you want to raise the minimum wage? That'll collapse the economy. That's the last thing. That's what we said the last time they talked about raising the minimum wage. And the time before that, and the time before that, and the time before that, and the time before that. And it's never happened. But we're going to keep saying it because nobody will call us the lying sacks of shit we are every time we get proven wrong.
Exactly. Because they've been cutting public schools ever since, so people don't get proper education. They don't understand American history. They don't understand why unions came about. I'm a proud AFSCME member. Love AFSCME. It saved my ass. There's a reason we have unions. You know, even in Germany, they came over here to build a car factory, and, you know, this is real anti-union territory. Now, they were like, VW was like, well, they didn't vote for the union, but we like unions. Even the company was like, no, we're going to have a union. So that was, it's a big row, ROW,
Oh, yeah, Chattanooga?
Chattanooga, South Carolina. You know, I don't know how these people have just been brainwashed and they just don't understand history. I mean, you know, Pinkertons, I mean, come on. We have just slowly melted. Maybe not that slowly, into fascism. You know, the merge of corporate and political interests. And we got, if we don't shake this thing loose, man, I promise after this, I just have to ask your opinion on this.
All right. Cause
am I going crazy or when Sotomayor, when she was, or even before her, it was another, a black woman, Lonnie Guinier. Up for Supreme Court. But let's just start with Sotomayor. They kept saying, well, we don't know. We don't want any activist judges.
Oh, she wants to have empathy. Oh, she calls herself a wise Latina.
Everybody
knows
a
Latina can't be wise.
You know, meanwhile, the Heritage Foundation's over there paying some dude to put out this bullshit academics that says Hispanic Americans will never be as intelligent as white ones because they're Hispanic.
And then we have the rats, and they're not activists, are they?
Oh no! They're constitutional originalists.
Yeah, I got some original stuff for them.
Well, they're selling the old original bull.
Bob, listen, Mr. Branson will be contacting you.
I look forward to hearing from him. Hey, you can just give him my email address.
I'll do that.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
See you, Todd. Bye now.
Good night.
Todd calling from the wilds of South Carolina, Stan. Line's open. 304-574-8178 is the number. A little observation coming in from Anthony down Florida way. I know it's a little late in the show to comment on Flush Limbaugh, but I was driving with him when you were talking about his Palm Beach mansion. I live about 20 minutes from that POS, and let me tell you, the concentrated wealth on that island would blow your mind. I have to admit, I struggle with having to live with myself after enjoying an afternoon bike riding and body surfing with the other half. Well, don't struggle. Don't. Don't at all. If anything, I hate to say it, but this is going to be really cruel and shitty on my part, but Rush Limbaugh living on the island there. There are some times that sea level rise doesn't seem like such a bad idea. Would he float to the phone? Say, hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, this is Diane in Kansas, Dan.
Hey, Diane.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How's Kansas?
Well, that's why I'm calling. It's nuts. I mean, I'm nominating Chris Kobach.
Your attorney general.
No, Secretary of State.
Oh, Secretary of State.
Sorry. Well, and it's he's gone off the deep end, and I missed some of the first part of your program. I was getting a new stove delivered.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a pain to get it in up the stairs and all that. But at any rate, when I was able to tune into your program, I was hearing about the nuts at the Fox, the Fox lineup, and I thought I'd add my nomination for Moran.
Oh, do please.
MSNBC's been reporting that it's a circus, and I guess Rachel Maddow, I really don't watch TV news, but I've been on the internet, and he's you know, the Kansas State Supreme Court ruled that the Democrat could remove himself from the ballot. And so I think you and I discussed how important the Kansas race might be for the U.S. Senate.
Right.
The balance. Apparently Kentucky and Kansas, either one could make a difference. Okay, so the U.S. Supreme Court rules that, and now Chris Kobach is sending out the ballots to the military and voters overseas, saying that, you know, here's your ballot to vote, but there is a disclaimer. We might issue another ballot later, and if so, I don't know. The second ballot will be the one to count, you know, some convoluted instructions, because he wants the Democrats to run someone.
Yeah.
And my understanding is the Democrats are saying, we don't have to. You have no right. But that's not keeping him from playing these games with the.
Yeah, I don't see the. You know, based on the conversation I was having with Todd a couple of minutes ago, Diane, I don't see the Republicans in South Carolina screaming for somebody to put Democrats on the ballot against their Republicans.
Yeah, Kansas is. I mean, and he's interjecting uncertainty into the whole process. Or at least for the overseas ballot. And it's not only that, but he is calling for a two-tier voting system here in Kansas. It just gets worse, Bob.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it gets worse. I'm just so, you know, Kansas on the ground is not so bad. I have a surreal experience here in Kansas, because when I walk around, you know, these guys who delivered the stove couldn't be nicer and more helpful. And, you know, there's just, you get a certain experience of the place when you just interact with ordinary people. And then there's this other thing going on that you can't even believe came out of these, you know, is thrown up into the political process from these nice, ordinary people. So I do not experience Kansas with any. I can't get it. I don't get it. But here's the two-tier thing. He's pushing a two-tiered voting system that would let those who provide proof of citizenship vote in all elections while restricting those who don't to federal elections. And he's leading.
No, Diane, you can't
I'm reading this off in Messenger.
You can't just throw that out there and keep moving.
Sorry.
What in the sweet name of?
Thank you, Bob. I love that reaction, because I'm just sick. I'm just sick about it. Yeah. But that's really all I know about it. Once again,
another example of something that would not even be able to be talked about in a mental institution were it for what the rats did to the Voting Rights Act.
That was a bad day. There's been a lot of bad days, you know. And I like the way you always trace it back to these important junctures. And he's also leading a data sharing effort among states aimed at finding improperly registered voters. You know, the three of them.
Oh, but I was going to say both of them. And they're both Republicans. Not yelling at you, but you nailed my feet to the floor. With two-tiered voting system?
Yeah. What is that? I mean, I don't know how much traction it has. I mean, I was just picking this up on MSNBC, tonight while I was waiting for the...
I mean, that's straight out of the Republican Dirty Tricks playbook, where they send out the flyers, and of course nobody's registered and nobody ever gets caught, but they send out the flyers that say, Republicans vote on November 2nd, Democrats vote on November 3rd. You know, when the election's on November 2nd.
My God. Yeah. Well, I don't know if this can get worse, but another aspect of it is he is he is, what is it called? He's heading up Brownback's election campaign. Yeah.
Okay. Campaign manager.
Whatever that's called. I mean, to me that's just, I don't know. I mean,
conflict of interest? Anybody?
Oh yeah. I mean, if there were stronger three word phrase, I would use it. But
you mean goddamn travesty?
almost, Bob.
No, that's two.
Closer. And you know, that reminds me that sometimes when I'm walking around in the day, I'm really used to editing my comments, depending on where I am, because I of what I do, you know, and where I am.
Oh, I'm a merciless editor.
Pardon?
I'm a merciless editor.
Yeah. I'm real selective about what I say, depending on who I'm talking to, and you know all that. But I swear to God, sometimes I'm up in front of people, and I don't speak on the political process per se. But if something comes up, like tangentially related, you know, related, it's political and tangentially related to what I teach about. You know, I have to really work a little bit harder these days because of you, because I might say Rand Paul and that thing on his head, you know. Or worse.
Wait.
Worse.
I have become a problem.
No. I mean, on balance, it's much more a pleasure. But I'm just saying that my it's just a little bit more effort in editing my comments. Because you have certain phrases like, you put out a string of things, booger eater, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I have to just kind of put it to the side, you know, if I'm talking
I never set out to complicate anybody's life,
oh,
I promise,
okay.
Diane.
Please complicate my...
Do you know where it comes from? Can I tell you?
Yes, please.
It comes from my classical schooling.
Oh,
if you go and read the Iliad, and remembering of course that the Iliad long before it was ever written down was a spoken word piece.
Yeah.
Well, the mnemonics, if that's the right word, for remembering all those words. I mean, the hallmark of a great educated Greek in the classical world was that he or she could recite all of the Iliad.
Wow.
Okay, I mean, and it was not a rarity. You didn't get invited to the right parties if you couldn't.
Yeah.
But part of a spoken word tradition is strings of phrases.
Oh.
Swift-footed Achilles, or you know, swift-footed Hector, whatever. Bold Achilles, contentious Agamemnon, the Argives of mighty spear. They, if you go and you read the Iliad, these little things pop up constantly. So.
And so then it becomes Rand Paul and that thing
on his head. Yes.
Oh my God. Well, it's very descriptive. It's enjoyable to listen to. It's truth. You know, it's mixed in with such truth that, you know, it's cool. But I'm just saying, I have to just kind of edit it
Louis,
out.
You know, Louis Gohmert and his asparagus.
Oh God! What did he
cantaloupe,
say?
Cantaloupe calf Steve King.
Oh, what did now that Gohmert cat? He said, "Don't disparage my asparagus," right?
Don't cast aspersions on my asparagus.
Well, I've heard that I've read it in print. I've heard it from you. It comes up now and then on your program. And I swear to God, I have no clue what he was talking about at all.
Nobody does. Nobody does. I mean, it was straight out of Lewis Carroll.
Oh, Jabberwocky.
And he's sitting there having this heated exchange with the Attorney General of the United States. And here's the fun part. There's nothing worse than two lawyers in a cat pissing match.
Oh, Jackson Brown and Lawyers in Love.
There you go.
Yep. Yep.
Louis Gohmert knows that he is not the jurisprudential equal of the Attorney General by any stretch of the imagination. And yet Louis Gohmert was on the verge of being appointed to the Texas Supreme Court. He sat on the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. If you can imagine. I mean, just anybody letting him into law school, let alone out, baffles me. But
he said that as a matter of public record. It wasn't that at a
hearing. It was in a hearing. It was in a hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
The Attorney General told him that something was simply not true, and Louis Gohmert responded on the record in front of God and everybody, "Don't cast aspersions on my asparagus."
Is that some kind of Texas colloquialism, or
I love the fact that you go there. Well, maybe that's how you know. Because see, I would do that. Maybe that's how they talk in West Virginia. We got a lot of Texans listening to this program, and nobody wrote in after that particular evening and said, "Now, Bob, lighten up." Yeah, that's just something we say down to the dance hall on Saturday night when somebody's getting our goat.
So he's just wacko.
Yeah, he's a lunatic. I mean, this is the same guy who has living in his mind imaginary constituents who stand in line at the grocery store behind imaginary food stamp recipients with their shopping jitney just mounded up with frozen Alaskan king crab legs.
Yeah. Well, these are petty little stingy, fearful little people. And you know, to follow that phrase, I want to finish up on Kobach. Did I also tell you this is the last thing I'm nominating him for? I probably did tell you he's leading a data sharing effort. Oh yeah, that's right, because you said there were two voters. What I wanted to say is that critics are calling that a voter purge play. I did want to mention that. Like, that's a way to purge voters. So.
Well, I have no doubt that it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've covered that.
Well, you're never going to find a Republican trying to expand the franchise.
No, you've covered that real well.
I mean, even the Republicans who wanted to free the slaves in the South at the time of the Civil War didn't want to extend the franchise.
Yeah.
There's that wonderful scene, and I don't know how much reality there is to it, but I would be surprised if there isn't a little bit. There's that wonderful scene in the movie Lincoln where they're debating in the House of Representatives, and they're talking about the fate of the freed slaves, and somebody says, "Well, next thing you know, you'll be talking, you want to let them vote? Next thing you'll be talking about letting women vote." And that just hit me right across the chops in the movie theater, Diane, because what occurred to me is, wow, there were a bunch of guys sitting in the U.S. House of Representatives who were less terrified of freed slaves voting than of women voting.
Yeah. Yeah, fearful little people, really. You know, I'm aware that you have very little time left, and I wonder if I could just shift gears and report on something very superficial.
Oh, we're always open for superficial here.
Yeah, well, I can't help with food porn because I got this new stove, and I'll probably never cook on it, you know. I mean, seriously, it was kind of a waste of my time.
Oh, I don't know. If we ever put together the Kickstarter campaign, one of them will be, Bob will come to your house and cook dinner or burn dinner or something.
Oh, good. That would be just fine because sometimes I just boil dinner and, you know, but here's the thing. You encouraged me to watch Firefly. That's what
yes,
I wanted to
yes.
Okay, I'm into the third episode. I just wanted to give a brief reaction. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Isn't it cool? Yeah, but it's not unwatchable. I mean, it's strange, but it's good. I mean, and if you start thinking about the model that we're going to have interstellar space travel, but at the same time there are going to be these colony worlds that are operating on 19th century levels with a little smattering of advanced technology, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, and then it's just strange because of because I go from Deep Space Nine and Star Trek and then go to that, but it's the Western music that I'm having a hard time.
Oh, you mean the slide guitar and the twang and all of that?
Yeah, and the Western, you see horses and cows now and then. Well, I'm into it kind of, but it's, and I looked at Josh Whedon, right? He's the, creator.
Yeah, right.
And then that took me to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I just wanted to see, well, what else has this guy done? And so then I watched two episodes of Buffy,
Buffy was fun. I mean.
Well, I'm telling you, it's just your suggestion is just leading me down paths that have hereforth been.
Well, Josh Whedon's fascinating because he takes genres and turns them on their ear. I mean, you know, we talked about the concept of space opera, which comes from the concept horse opera, and he just took it to its logical extreme. It's a horse opera, you know, Firefly is a horse opera in space.
Well, you know, I felt really odd because when you said that, I asked you, do they sing? And I realized that was probably a strange question from your point of view. I had no idea about this opera business, horse opera, and you know, but I guess, I mean, then you said soap opera, and then I thought, oh, it's a genre. Oh, I see.
Yeah, bingo.
You know.
There's no Deep Space Aida. No Deep Space, you know, no Interstellar La Boheme.
Okay.
Although I would give my home in glory, and if I didn't have one, I'd sublet it and rent one to see the Rigel 12 Green Woman version of Madame Butterfly.
Oh, you mean with the Star Trek Green Woman?
Yeah. Give me another of those Keese's James Kirk. You know, that woman.
This is the second time you brought that up. I have never seen that episode, which is why I did not get it the first time you brought it up. But I'm going to go on Amazon Prime and find that episode and see this Green Woman.
Well, actually, she's just a flashback.
Oh.
I think she's a flashback in the first episode there. With the big headed aliens.
Oh, of the first Star Trek.
Yeah, because the big headed aliens are like reading Kirk's mind or something. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to go find it because this is the second time you brought up the Green Woman and kisses from the Green Woman. So it must have been an impactful episode. So I'll.
Well, it's just the idea of James Kirk interstellar Lothario, you know.
Oh, gosh. Well, I wanted to report on my reaction to Firefly, which is...
Well, don't give up on it, Diane.
No, I won't give up. I like the main guy. I think he's kind of cool. And I think the character development is pretty good. And they're not going to do what I expect him to do, which I like. You know, it's going to be... Everything's going to be kind of surprising. But I tell you what, there's some stuff in there that... I only watch TV at night, so I'll fall asleep. That's the only time I watch Amazon video on my, you know, tablet or turn on the TV. I just do it to turn off the cognitive stuff I do. And then eventually I'll fall asleep. And it's difficult for me to see, you know, who are the species, the reavers that carve up people?
Well, see, that's the fun, that's the shame of it all. Had they had enough time to do justice to the program, it would have all made sense. But instead, they got canned after the first season. So what you have to do is you have to watch the whole season. Then you have to go and find the movie Firefly, and everything gets wrapped up.
But it's just so disturbing. I will probably have to go find the movie. But
we're rapidly running out of time. One last thing to ponder. And this is just pure literary nerdiness. I love the fact that the creepy thing, the creepy critters in Firefly are named after a Faulkner novel title.
Oh, well, I'll stay with it now.
Yeah, see? Yeah. See? Hey, Diane, I got to get out of here.
A whole stream of consciousness if it's Faulkner. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, okay, I'll stay with it now for sure.
All right, thanks, Diane. Out of here.
Thank you, Bob. Bye.
Bye-bye. Diane calling from Kansas, Stan, and wow, yeah, 12, 10 seconds to go to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. We'll be back for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Bye now.